This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and for Avid Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The title of the book is When Clans Collide, and our author is Wayne Rudolph Davidson. The subtitle of this book, The Germination of Adam's Family Tree Through Surname, Life Experience, and DNA. Now, this Adam in the book is not the one found in Genesis, is it, Wayne?
No, he's not. This Adam is the African-American slave who I found to enter this country representing my family tree.
And that goes back to the 1700s where this story begins?
Well, the story actually begins before the 1700s because I initially researched my surname. And as I researched my surname, that led me to how the African-American side of my family tree acquired the surname.
You've done extensive study and research in this publication, this book. Was it designed specifically for your own satisfaction, or is there something else there in the story?
Well, actually, it's my own satisfaction, but I had a cousin who conducted a research on the maternal family tree, and I was a little jealous, I guess you could say. So I wanted to know my paternal family tree. I wanted to understand where my father came from. So I sort of sat down with her. Her name is Katie Bennett, and she gave me some tips, and I decided I would go for it on that particular topic, because David McCullen, who's a historian, he said that he wrote books because he wanted to see books that did not exist. And so I took that to heart, and I wanted to see a book that existed, that detailed or gave me an understanding of my paternal family tree.
I noticed in your personal biography that we share some things in common. At least it appears that way. When I tell people about my early education and high school, I say it was the best 10 years of my life. How did you do as a student early in life?
As a student, I probably could have done better. I sort of ended up, I love study. Yeah, I guess I just was a quiet sort of person. I was not at the head of my class. So I got better as a student, and I started to, as I moved through high school and college, I got to be a better student. And I enjoyed those high school years, but I wish I had them back. I'm a better student today.
And also a degreed individual. Tell me about that.
Yes. I guess the U.S. Army sort of helped me there. As a soldier, I had an opportunity to do my duty during the day and study at night. And so wherever I would be stationed in the world, I would, of course, do my duty wherever that station was. And then at night I would go to the local education center and be engrossed in some sort of learning situation. And I was lucky enough to end up earning my doctoral degree from the University of Phoenix in 2008.
Congratulations on that. Just as a side note to our listeners, I would be considered by most of my professors and by my teachers as an underachiever. And there are a lot of other people out there who were considered underachievers that did great things. So I congratulate you on your achievement of not only completing this book, but also getting your doctorate degree.
Thank you.
Your book, do you think it will appeal to more than just a limited number of readers?
Well, yeah, I think so. Because, again, as I started out with a known factor, and that was my surname. And that took me to Europe and Scotland and Ireland and the United Kingdom. So I found out how surnames are applied, and that's where the term clan comes from, because most of those surnames, the Clan Davidson is where my surname comes from. So I used that as my track, and I then followed those folks with the surname as they progressed in the New World and came to America and got their starts. That's where Adam came in, because Adam ended up becoming a property of Alexander Davidson of Kentucky.
You also mentioned the term DNA. Did the DNA, did you actually do a DNA search also about your family?
Well, the DNA is sort of what really motivated me, because the book actually is in three parts. The surname is would be the first part. My own life experience would happen in part two. And the DNA, I took a DNA test in, I believe it was 2006, and I found out that my roots are with the Ashanti culture of Ghana. That's on the Gold Coast of Western Africa. And so, you know, that fascinated me, because as I continued to read and learn, I wonder how I would do if I grew up in that culture. The other part of my DNA is on my mother's side was Native American. So that was of interest too. We could always see that on my mother's side there was a heavy Native American presence, but there was no DNA test that certified that. So that's how DNA came about, and it also helped me to say, hey, there's new information here. Let me take a look at it.
Found out something else in your book in the early, I guess, 1800s, going back that far or further. Some of your relatives actually were involved in ministerial work.
Yes. There's what I tried to do with, I would look for three names that came from Clan Davidson, and that would be Davidson, which is formal, then Davison, which would be less formal, and then Davis. And they all mean the same thing, son of David. And I would look for people and their positions and achievements in making this country great. So I would record those, what they did and who they were and where they were located, because in essence that was a map. And that sort of allowed me to say, I'm connected to that person, maybe not biologically in some cases, but I'm connected to them by at least my surname. So I'll take credit for whatever they did.
Mm-hmm. Wayne, you spent a lot of time doing research on this. How long did it take to put your book to its completion?
Well, it started out, I would say, in the early 90s. I just picking up bits and pieces from stories from other family members. And as I acquired more knowledge and more understanding, I accumulated the facts and or whatever that story was, and I would put it on a shelf, and then I would wait to use that material when it was more relevant to me. And so it took about 20 years getting started and picking up the information. And as I got better in my writing abilities and being able to create a storyline, then things started to become more clear on my approach and made my approach more narrow. A fact that I picked up maybe in 1991 that might have just been a passing tidbit, well, 10 years later it had more relevance because I knew more about how that tidbit be generated.
In all of the research you've done, are there some key messages that transcend generations and cultures?
Well, I think the one message is that I've learned is that we should always know where we come from. And that helps us as we move out into the future for future generations. We should not have a blind eye on any of our former generations, because they were survivors of whatever lifestyles or periods that they had to live through, so that we in the current day period could be here, to thrive and survive. So those are the messages that I would think about, is that know your history and pass it on to the next generation.
One bit of historical information that may be controversial to some was the discovery that there were black Confederate soldiers. Was there anything else that you discovered that was unusual in the history of the United States and of your family tree?
Well, that was an interesting factoid. I learned that when I was stationed near Fort Lee, Virginia, just in passing, when I used to visit the battlefields. But one of the other things concerning that time period was that I learned that there was a Davidson, Albert Davidson, who is a most likely an African American relative of mine from the Barron County, Kentucky. He served in the Union Army. I was unaware that I had anybody who served in the Union Army. So that was a factor that really was exciting to me.
How would you introduce your book to someone?
Well, I would introduce my book to a person that I'd say, I connected my ancestral tree through my surname. It was easy, it was fun, and you can do it too. Because as I said, everybody needs to know where they came from.
Wayne, in reference to the genealogy sites, where did you find information about your family history?
Well, initially, Ancestry.com has made research so easy. In the 90s, when I initially conducted research, it was by hand. I actually had to go find a book and try to weed through the book for facts that were prevalent to me or relevant to me. Well, Ancestry.com, with new technology, and I'll just use that, they're the most visible. Everything seems to be on a giant database with new technology unfolds, and you can just type in a name or a fact, and something will come up that you can use that allows you to gather information on a person, a place, or a thing that might have transpired 100 years ago.
That's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Is there a particular discovery that you came across, in addition to the fact that perhaps one of your relatives served in the Union Army, that stands out as, wow, I didn't realize that was there, and that's an exciting bit of history?
Yes. Talking with my dad, he sort of provided me with some insight on his father. But as I researched what he provided me, I looked at the 1870 U.S. Census, which is the ninth census, and I located his grandfather, his great-grandfather. And his name is Harris Davidson. And when I looked at that, because I was astounded, because the 1870 census is the census that first recognized African Americans as citizens of the United States, where
wow.
It was recorded. So now I've got my dad's stories, and now I can trace to a physical document where this becomes real. Because my dad knew his great-grandfather. His name was Chris Davidson, but he knew nothing about Harrison Davidson. And from that, I could almost find out from some of the family records from prior to 1870, some of the other unnamed African-American Davidsons who were possibly related to. So Harrison Davidson, seeing his name in the 1870 U.S. Census, was probably the most magnificent factoid I discovered.
I guess I need to go to Ancestry.com or one of those other sites and find out where my family came from. I have no clue beyond my parents, and that's about it. Tell me how this book is different. This is historical in its nature and research in its content. What makes it different from other books in the marketplace?
Well, it's different because it's my own story. Everybody has a story, and the difference here is it's my story. So now I'm becoming a more informed person about myself. Mr. Alex Haley, his story was his story. Mr. Booker T. Washington, his story was his story. Now I have a Wayne Davidson story. So I feel more ingrained to being a part of this American culture, and I make sure that I pass information on to my daughters. And they've got a copy of the book, and they're happy that they know where they came from.
And that you completed it.
Yes, and I completed it. So that's what I think.
On a personal note, I will say from reading excerpts from the book and looking through it, I think it would be a great read for anybody. Yeah. So I'm going to recommend it. You've done a great job of researching and have notes and reference points, everything that anybody could want to know to research your family history, but probably a good step towards researching their family history as well.
Yes, thank you.
What was the most challenging part of putting this book together, getting it to print?
Well, the most challenging part, again, was the research. As I became a better researcher with my mechanics, and as technology changed, the research was like opening up a box on Christmas Eve. You open up a box and you find something, and you say, wow, this is magnificent. Then you open up another box, and there's something new there. So the challenging part was opening up all of these boxes and being able to control all the enthusiasm as I find new information. Because at some point you have to sort of stop and say, hey, I need to narrow my focus. But with every different box being opened, something new popped up. So I enjoyed that part. It was challenging, but it was exhilarating at the same time.
Wayne, share with our listeners where we can get a copy of your book.
Abbott Press, www.abbottpress.com, is a place that you could dial into, type into, and get that book. Also, Barnes & Noble and Amazon.com. And I'll be happy to sign any copy that a person picks up.
Fabulous. And are you motivated enough from this experience that you might consider writing another book?
Oh, yes. I'm almost done with a second portion, my own life experience, because I felt that portion has to be told, too. I know where my ancestors have come from. Now it's time to talk about my own experience in my lifetime.
Look forward to hearing about that. Wayne Rudolph Davidson, our author. The title of the book, When Clans Collide, The Germination of Adam's Family Tree Through Surname, Life Experience, and DNA. Thank you, Wayne, for joining me today.
Thank you, Jay.
For Indie Book Publishing, Abbott Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi everybody, this is Pete Dix of Beatles and Beyond. Why don't we all come together and hear some of the tracks off the latest Beatles release on this radio station. Yes, why don't you look up the schedules on this radio station and join me and Beatles listeners everywhere to hear the latest releases from the Beatles on Beatles and Beyond with Pete Dix.
Connect with Juliana and connect with what lies beneath. Friday afternoons at 4 or 3 Central on TogiNet.com. Juliana is a marriage, family, and child therapist who wants people to connect. Connect with what lies beneath, those truths and answers. And through her counseling practice, she has helped others find their personal power and fulfill their dreams. And she wants to do the same for you. Here on Connect with Juliana. Through intimate discussions, intriguing subject matters, and the expertise of her guests. For more on the show and Juliana, check out her webpage. Connect with Juliana in media.com. Juliana will cover it all. Nothing is off limits. She wants to know what matters to you. Make the connection. Tune into TogiNet to connect with Juliana to find out the facts that could be hidden beneath the surface. Connect with Juliana on TogiNet to make a quality connection in your life. Friday afternoons at 4, 3 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and for Indie Book Publishing. This is J. Douglas Barker. We're reviewing a Balboa Press release today titled An Exceptional Zephyr and our author, Dorian Dalta. Dorian, welcome to the program.
Boy, Jay, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
It's January when this is being recorded. You're in the northern part of the United States. I'm assuming it's cold there.
You know, it is, although today is warmer after a really cold stretch. Honestly, I was in New Mexico about a week ago, so I beat a little of the cold. I think I'm getting used to it. I thought about that last night, and I hate to even say that. I don't even know if we should,
Don't even know if we should even bring it up. But your book has the word Zephyr in it, so it caught my attention. An Exceptional Zephyr. What type of novel or book is this?
Fiction, certainly, and really showcases an old man kind of towards the end of his life and is having reflections, good and bad, about his life. And I think mostly there's certainly a lot of regrettable things that he's begun to ponder more seriously as his health is kind of failing. And so showcasing that.
Is there anything in here that draws from your personal experience that you've also adapted to this novel?
Absolutely. I think I wrote it as a tribute to my father, who late in life, really in ill health for several years. And I was estranged from my father for a long time. And so there was something about giving my dad a voice. And so I think I was journaling around a lot of those ideas and then, making stuff up and putting it down. And then it kind of developed itself into a kind of a finished product, and that's the product.
Dorian, what is the name of your key character in this novel?
Raja.
Raja. Would you describe Raja as a sympathetic character, someone that we can adapt to and embrace?
I would say there's empathy. Reality is kind of a humdinger a little bit, and so I think I would hope readers can relate to the character, both good and bad. I mean, I think we've all done things in our lives that are regrettable, or looking back, we think, geez, we could have played that much better. But it's real life, and we do the best we can. And I think there's another reason I wrote the book. I mean, there's something about the nature of our experiences that is really transitory. And a lot of times you go into things kind of foggy, and it's only in hindsight where things are clear. And so, you kind of learn through those experiences, both good and bad. So I think in that respect, there certainly can be empathy, given to Raja. Absolutely.
Are there other authors or novelists that you have admired and would like to be compared to?
Well, I'm just a voracious reader. I'm reading a Ray Bradbury book right now, and that's kind of cool. I'm a huge Haruki Murakami fan, Japanese writer. Mystical realism is kind of his genre, and I love that. I like, Stephen King, actually, which is weird for me to say, but I've read through the Gunslinger series or the Dark Tower series some time ago, and that really struck me. I like the classics. There's just something about books and writing and kind of the dissemination of ideas that I think I'm just really, it's just, I'm just absolutely compelled by that. So in writing, the goal is to kind of share those ideas and hopefully people can relate to them and through, the catalyst of a story, I guess. And so, yeah, I'm compelled by it for sure.
Any advice you've received either in life or in towards your writing career that has really stuck with you and has been a foundation you're building on?
Well, now I just want to tell jokes, but
go ahead. I've had some of my authors sing, so that's all right.
Yeah, advice. Not really. I think I really operate a lot by intuition, and so I think there's life in the universe, and maybe this will sound kind of a little ethereal, but I just think, the universe presents you what you need when you need it. And so it'll, bring to you the people that you need. And I don't know, I guess I've always felt there's just a lot of optimism, I think, in how I operate. Even, when things aren't necessarily going so well, I still have a deep rooted sense of optimism, and having to do with both just people and how life seems to unfold. And so there's a lot of people, I guess. But yeah, I don't, I can't think of anything really specifically.
Well, optimism is a great gift just in itself, and you've been given that from someplace and someone. So that's an encouraging thing for other authors to focus on the positive.
Certainly.
Who's your target audience with this book?
Everybody, Jay.
Everybody in the world.
Yeah, it's a big world. I think, you know, this book, I wrote a book before this one. They're both, I think, paced really well, and so they move pretty quickly. I think there's some compelling characters, and so with this book in particular, I think so far anyway, an audience familiar with any kind of addiction kinds of things certainly, I think, would find this book to be perhaps helpful or interesting. And then certainly a geriatric or older population, I think, may find this book to be interesting. But I don't want to pin it to those groups either, because I just think, you know, even young folks may find some of these ideas pretty interesting, and just, you know, hopefully just ends up being a fun read for people.
An Exceptional Zephyr. That title is unique. Where did that come from, and what's the genesis of it?
Yeah, this stuff comes out of the air a little bit, but there's something about, again, the idea that our lives and experiences are transitory, and it just seems as we go through life, there's, you know, it's certainly rich and just full of wonder and excitement, but all those things seem to go so quickly. And in this story, where an old man is kind of reflecting back on his life, it's like everything happens in the wink of an eye. And so, like the wind, you know, I guess I kind of thought of it that way. I don't know. There's something really simple and really rich about that. And so I wherever that came from, I wrote it down in an effort not to forget it, you know.
The process of writing a book, do you work off of an outline, or do you just get inspired and start writing?
I just get inspired and start writing. Typically, I write around ideas. Yeah, I'm working on a third project now, and it's interesting. I usually have a main idea or a main theme, and then I work characters or situations from, you know, point A to point B and point B to point C and kind of write it that way. And I think with Zephyr, I kind of wrote a little out of order, and then just kind of like shuffling cards, shuffled episodes into. So that was a bit different than the first one, and I'm finding the third one is kind of unfolding that way as well. So I don't know. I don't know how to explain it, and I get asked that a lot, and I wish I had a clearer answer for how books take form. And I think, you know, 80% of it's kind of sitting down and just hammering it out, and I there's certainly kind of magic that begins to happen as I do that. But I really feel, the first two anyway, it felt like they wrote themselves, and I get asked this a lot. It doesn't take long, you know, probably in the course of a couple months just of writing. And then it's like I have a, you know, a rough manuscript, and then I start, you know, kind of enlisting editors and really pounded it into shape. So it just feels like it's pretty fast, and I don't know how it happens, but it's really sitting down and kind of being disciplined about getting the ideas to the page.
Every author is different. I've talked to some that have taken as long as 10, 12, 14 years to get their first novel completed, and others that they can complete one in 30 days. So everyone is
right.
Unique, and it's interesting to hear how storylines come together with different authors. Is there one scene in this book that you think is probably the highlight of the piece, of the Exceptional Zephyr?
Boy, in an effort not to give the book away, I would say there are things that happen kind of toward the end of the book that, boy, that's a good question. I think there are things that happen throughout the book where Raja is kind of starting to cross over into kind of a land behind the curtain, if you will, or and he's starting to, you know, so he's starting to kind of leave the physical world and go into kind of this mythical world, depending on our religious or mystical kind of beliefs. He's entering into that other realm, and that was really, it was fun to write those things, because I could kind of just not think about them too much and let intuition guide me in those places, and those are kind of scattered throughout the book, because as he deteriorates physically, he's understanding more, a richer, I think it's a better idea of, you know, what that kind of non-physical experience is all about. And so that was fun to write those. So I would say, as far as an episode, there are several of those throughout the book, but he's leaving the physical world and kind of crossing over. And those, I mean, that was just really fun to write.
Who is Victoria in your novel?
She is Raja's mother-in-law. And, you know, I'll probably expand on other books later down the line or in characters like Victoria. I work as a crisis counselor as well, part-time, aside from writing. And I'm fascinated by, you know, folks with kind of psychological challenges. And borderline personality disorder is one that is very interesting, and it seems as though folks with borderline come from very kind of a rough background, and so their norm is operating kind of in chaos. And so we all know people who, as we relate with them, it's like kind of getting pulled into their tornado. And so I wanted to kind of illuminate some of those experiences for people. And Victoria, I tried to typify as that kind of a character. She's just, you know, kind of corrupt, man. She's just really talented at creating havoc. And there's just real brilliance in that. And so I'd like to kind of expand on those ideas in later work, illuminate what a, you know, what kind of a chaotic reality that can be.
What makes your books different than others in the marketplace?
Well, again, I think the pace of the book and the one before, too, is paced in a really similar way. And then there's something about, and, you know, I picked this up, what was I reading recently? A new book out, actually, called Middle Sea by William Gass. I don't know if you're familiar, but I wasn't. And I was out in New Mexico just kind of drifting around, and I happened across this book, started reading it. And so as I've been talking to people about, when you read a good writer, there's something about, it doesn't matter what they're writing about, because the writing is just so good that it's like it just keeps you, they can be talking about a wheat field and it's just like the best thing on the planet, you know? And so I think, you know, as I've gotten more into this writing thing, I really feel as though I'm finding my voice. And so people have to be the judge of that. I can't be the judge of that on my own stuff, but I would say that I do have a voice as a writer. I typically get pretty nice comments about the unique nature of both the ideas and the story. So.
Since this book was based on, at least partially on some of your personal experiences, were there any challenges about bringing this story into print?
Yeah, mostly it was fun because it was basically the ideas that I wanted to capture and some of the emotion. I would say the challenge was working to keep it light because it's a pretty heavy topic. And I think, you know, those who are familiar with the hospice realm or any of those kinds of things, it can be really, even counseling for that matter, can be, you know, just really kind of heavy emotionally and kind of can make you tired, you know, those kinds of things, just heavy stuff. So I also threw in kind of comedic episodes and just wanted to kind of at least balance out the heavy nature of the subject matter.
The most challenging part of it, yes.
Yeah, I would say so.
Dorian, this book, titled An Exceptional Zephyr, has to be available for purchase. Where do we get copies of it?
Oh, my gosh. You know, you can really go to your favorite book retailer, and if they don't have a copy, they can certainly order it. BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com, DorianDalta.com, BalboaPress.com. I mean, it's kind of all over. I know I've been seeing it pop up a little bit more nationally now, and so I think it's kind of starting to bloom a little bit in places. So that's pretty cool. So I think people are requesting it, and so absolutely available.
Sure. And if they do a search under Dorian Dalta, they'll also find some locations and keep up with your writing progress.
Boy, thanks for asking. You bet. Twitter, Facebook, DorianDalton.com, you bet.
Fabulous. For Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs.
inspired by Ellen DeGeneres. Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and for Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. An interesting book, the title, Island Splashes, and our author, Crystal G. Reese. Crystal joins us from Tonga. Crystal, where is Tonga?
It's in the middle of the ocean, Pacific Ocean. If you were to look at the map and go about two-thirds between Hawaii and roughly New Zealand, Australia, you would find the Kingdom of Tonga, located right on the international dateline, 20 degrees below the equator, approximately 2,000 miles from Sydney, Australia, just out in the ocean.
Wow. And this is a series of islands. If I'm understanding my geography, then there is a royalty associated with Tonga.
That's correct. There is. It has been under monarchy for quite some time. And presently, they're in the kind of change from a sole monarch to a constitutional-type monarch.
And what are you doing there? Are you writing more books? Or are you? Did you open a tanning salon? What was the reason you went to Tonga?
I'm actually a missionary with the United Pentecostal Church. I have been here 5.5 years before, and I have returned just recently for my second term, or my second stint, which will be another 5 years for here in the kingdom. And I'm just excited about what the Lord is doing. And in the process, I have felt maybe that another book might be coming. I don't know, right at this point.
Well, Tonga does have electricity, so it's the possibility of using a computer and communicating that way is certainly a realistic idea.
Sure.
Island Splashes, what is the book about, Crystal?
Actually, it's an autobiography about myself. When I was in the University of, it's a seminary, Urshan Graduate School Seminary there in St. Louis, Missouri, I was taking a course called Friendship Counseling, and in the process of that course, I began to look at the different leadership styles within my own personal life. And, you know, how in reflecting, I kind of began to wonder about maybe who my mentor was. And in the process of that, as I began to unfold that thought pattern, I began to realize there was a lot of people who were my mentors. And in so doing, their splashes, the events and those people began to take shape in my life, causing me to be mentored through the years. And through that, I began to write this book about the different people. Obviously, I couldn't put everybody into the book, but the different people who has impacted my life through the years and how now that is rippling out to reach the Kingdom of Tonga as well as other people along the way that I have met.
Your book, do you think it would appeal only to people who have a bend towards religious commentary, or is there more to this book than just that?
Yeah, there's a lot more to the book, I think, and a few people that have read it seems to think so as well, because it talks about being a young child growing up in a family who my father had leukemia, and the things that we had to deal with as a family, some situations that occurred, you know, and with it has religious overtones, how that our faith grew during that time as a family. I also talk about how that we never know if we have tomorrow, but we have right now, the present. And so there's a lot of other things in the book, such as stories when I went off to college and how that I felt like the Lord just was with me during some major decisions of college, because originally I wanted to be a doctor. But in the Lord leading me and guiding me through those college years and through some events and people. He took that dream of being a doctor to help people into missions. So it does have religious overtones, but at the same time, it's a lot of sort of short mini stories about how that I did become into missions and become a missionary.
You have 286 pages. Who do you think this book will appeal to and why?
Just about everybody, I hope. And the reason for that is because I talk about my childhood, and I talk about the difficulties at times in college, where I had to change my major, and well, I didn't have to, but I felt to. And even up into growing up years, once I got out of college and into adulthood, so there's so many different age brackets that I deal with in my life throughout the book. Yet at the same time, I think people can take from each part of those areas and be inspired.
How long ago, or what was the length of time that it took you to put this book together? And have you always wanted to be an author?
Well, I can answer the second question first. No, I have not always wanted to be an author. Matter of fact, I told the Lord that I would probably never write a book. It's amazing how when we say we won't do something, how it kind of turns around on us. But I never really thought about being an author. I never really thought that would be something I would be interested in. This particular book, it has come over quite a lengthy period of time. I mentioned the class that I was taking in Urshan Graduate School of Theology. That actually occurred about 3 years prior to the book being published. So technically, that assignment that I did was a three-year process, and then, of course, it turned into a book and now has been published.
What was the most powerful advice relating to life or writing that you have included in this book?
The most powerful advice? Probably trust in the Lord, because every day is a new day, and sometimes you never know what is going to come, so you have to walk by faith and have a strong understanding of the fact that this day, today, is all that I have, because tomorrow is going to be so different. And I would think that advice probably my father taught me as a young child through his sickness, that I have to give my best for today. And I think that is probably what has carried me through my life, you know, just to give my all for this day.
How did Tonga show up on your radar screen as a place that you wanted to invest your life?
I was actually, when I first got out of college and had really felt the call to missions, and there's an actual interesting story in the book where I tell about being in college and the Lord giving me a vision of this place, and I probably don't have time to tell you the whole story, but I saw in this vision a house that had like thatch roofs and woven walls, and of course I'd never seen anything like that in America. And there was a family that stood out in front of the house, and four kids. The two oldest children were about the ages of 15, 16 years old. And as I walked towards them in this vision, they started jumping up and down and said, "Sister Crystal, you came. You really did come." And that inspired me through my latter years of college. And when I got out, I began to wonder how I could fulfill that. And I began to look at where to go. Through our church organization, there was a program called Associates in Missions, which led me to a country just about 1,000 miles from here called Vanuatu. Most people know it as Survivor Vanuatu. I was in Vanuatu prior to the TV show Survivor. I tell people all the time I'm the original Survivor. But while I was there, I met a couple, and they were from the Kingdom of Tonga. And I got familiar with the country of Tonga through them, the culture, the language, the different aspects of it. But I never really thought that I would actually be here until I returned to the States and was raising some funds to go back to Vanuatu. The Lord made it very clear that it was Tonga that I need to come back to. And so I came thinking I was only going to be here 1 year, just a very small, short term to help out in our Bible school, doing some teaching and administrating. And when I got here, I ended up staying 5.5 years.
In your book, Island Splashes, is there a particular scene that you think the readers would gravitate toward and identify with?
I think there's a couple of different scenes. The one that sticks out in my mind the most is I tell about when my father passed away, being a young adult in university, and how that he was my best friend. I made many connections with him in terms of getting the one who gave me the advice in life, and the one that was the one that always listened to me, the one that just was there, present in my life all the time. And when he passed away, it seemed like my world had been turned upside down. And so I tell that story in the book, and how that it was a very decisive moment because I felt like everything was upside down. And I think that story probably touches a lot of hearts, but just because I'm so transparent in that particular story.
Tell me how you'd introduce this book to someone that doesn't know you or know about the background of Island Splashes.
Pretty much the way I mentioned it at the beginning of our conversation is that it's the many splashes of life, whether it be people or places, from a childhood up to my adult years as a missionary, how it has formed and shaped me and brought me to this place of working where I'm at today. And now I can, through those splashes, I'm being able to give back. And so I like to encourage people to let them know the splashes that they make in somebody's life, whether it's good or bad, that those things are going to continue to ripple through that person. And it's I guess we kind of need to be aware of how we treat people, and as well as how we want them to carry their legacy, their splash on into future generations.
Excellent.
Because the splashes do continue on.
Excellent advice. Island Splashes, 286 pages. Was there anything challenging about putting this into print?
Everything about the book is challenging, because I had to do a really hard look at my life. And when I say hard look, I mean it was, that's quite a few years to cover in 200 pages. But I had to look at the different people and the leaderships and how that they impacted me and affected me. And obviously I couldn't put everything in the book, so I needed to know which ones needed to go in the book and so forth. And so it was very challenging and very emotional for me as I began to unfold and as we say, unpack the suitcase of all of those emotions, and then reliving some things such as my father's passing and those emotions that came up through the book. So it was not something that I could just sit down and write, even though it was about myself. But it was something that it took a while, because I was reliving a lot of the frustration or the fear or the unknown, or you know, all those emotions that came with life as I went through it the first time, and how did it really affect me, and what lessons did I learn out of it. And as I began to put those on paper, then I began to really see how I had grown and how I really did become who I am today.
I would call Island Splashes an inspirational read, the life story and observations from Crystal G. Reese. Crystal, where do we get a copy of your book?
Westbow Press. You can go online to their website, their bookstore, to get a copy. You can also go, to my understanding, to most major book retailers such as Barnes and Noble and different places like that. You can go in and order it. I don't know if it's on the shelf in any of those places, but you can order it through those companies. You can also order it through Amazon. It's also in ebook form. So it can be picked up in many various ways.
Crystal, do you have a website by any chance or a blog site?
Of course, modern day times we have Facebook and Twitter, but which would have been helpful many, many, many years ago when I started missions work. But we do have, our church organization does have for each missionary a website through globalmissions.com, and you can search missionary Crystal Reese, and when that pulls up, it has newsletters from the kingdom, pictures and different things, has a little biography about myself. Maybe someday I'll have my own blog spot from here here in the Kingdom of Tonga. But for now, it's just the globalmissions.com page.
And the correct spelling of Crystal's name is CRYSTAL, middle initial G, mm-hmm. last name Reese, like Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. REECE. Thanks, Crystal, for joining me today. And best of luck. I'm going to let you get back to your recuperating from the day you had before, because we are several hours, 17 hours, I think, difference between where I'm recording this and where you are located. So the best of luck to you in the future, and hope to hear from you again.
Thank you so very much, Jay.
For Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.